So once again, Marquez remains undefeated for 3 months. Wait, the other one. Shit.
Welcome back to Motorsport 101.
Yes, we've had to transfer the undefeated title from the individual to the family. Welcome back, everybody.
Yes, welcome to episode 615 of Motorsport 101. I'm your friendly neighborhood host, Dre Harrison. Glad you could join us. And in the second part of our doubleheader, we're going to be talking about MotoGP's Grand Prix of Catalonia, the third of the four, I guess you could say, Spanish rounds on the calendar, depending on who you ask. And a much more conventional track that we go to on this one, and the result was anything but, kind of, sort of. The Marquez streak continues, kind of, sort of.
Not that one.
Yeah, just depends, again, it depends on the asterisk and what's in the small print behind it. You gotta check that out. But it was Alex Marquez that came through for his second Grand Prix win of the year in dramatic fashion, and he had to go through quite a few hurdles to get there first, including a shocking crash on Saturday that had us going, oh, Alex, what are we going to do with you, quite frankly? But we'll talk about that a little bit briefly. We've also got Cam Buckley on the show. Hello, Cam.
Hello, everyone. I'm sorry, I'm having a hard time focusing. There's just so much content on the internet right now.
We don't have to elaborate. We don't have to elaborate.
We're not going to elaborate.
Let's move on.
It's very funny, but also has to be said, the Johann Zarco stock is going down.
Oh,
and it makes me sad.
It is taking a bit of a blow in recent times. You know, it doesn't help he's had 5 crashes in Grand Prix in the last 8 races, and he's struggled for major points since. It started so well.
It's like the crash bug just bites different Honda riders at different times this year. The one's going okay, the other one's going okay, and then they just start crashing. Unless it's Luca Marini, and then they're just solid. Is
just
it great?
There.
No. Is it solid? Yes.
Yeah, definitely. It is kind of a wild one in that sense that, I read an article today saying that Honda are genuinely thinking about having Luca Marini be their headlining front-facing rider going forward because of his consistency. It's funny how these things turn out. Not bad for a man who punctured his lung 3 months ago, right? Right?
That wasn't even on this bike.
Yeah, shit's weird. So we'll be talking about that. We'll be talking about Alex and Marc Marquez and their fight for the win. We've got a brand new team owner in MotoGP, Gunther Steiner. Now a MotoGP team owner as well as a Formula One team owner, kind of, sort of, weird.
Only one in the works as well, if your rumor mills are to be believed.
No, we'll talk about a little bit of that. We'll talk a bit about Pecco Bagnaia and his continuing yo-yo state of form at the moment and break some of that down as well. And some of the city season talk. We just mentioned Johann Zarco. It was confirmed in the week leading up to this race that he signed a new 2-year extension to stay with LCR Honda going forward. So we'll talk about that and the potential ramifications at the end of the show. But in the meantime, there's some places you can find us. We're on youtube.com/motorsport101. We're on facebook.com/line. We're on Twitter at motorsport_101. You can follow us on Blue Sky personally at Dre Harrison, RJ O'Connell, and CBuckley917. BSky.social. You can follow us on Instagram at Motorsport101Pod and on TikTok at M101_podcast. You can check us out on our website as well, where you can check out our written content. You can do that at motorsport101.com/blog, including full reviews of this race, as well as Formula One's Italian Grand Prix and part one of our IndyCar season review. That will be in podcast form probably next week. Keep an eye on our social media for updates on that one. And if you're really lucky, so you can back us financially on Patreon. Patreon.com/motorsport101. $5 gets you early access to all of our content. You can upgrade to the $10 tier to listen to these episodes live as they're being recorded, which is what Ghost Raptor and Jason are doing right now. So thanks for guys for tuning in as ever. But right after this, we will get into the Grand Prix of Catalonia.
It was a tale of two races for one Mr. Alex Marquez. On Saturday, he captures a stunning pole by over 0.3 over noted man with a nosebleed, Fabio Quartararo, and led the first 8 laps of the sprint. But then on lap 9, death, taxes, Ducati tucking the front under the bridge heading into turn 10, and crashes out of the lead, gifting Marc Marquez his 14th sprint win of the season.
Is that good?
That is exceptional.
14 out of 15 this season, 8 in a row.
Pretty good. But on Sunday, after initial skirmish, Alex led over his brother, took the lead from him, and despite Mark dropping the hammer with 7 laps to go, Alex dropped it too, held his nerve, pushed, and broke away from Mark to pull away and take his second win of the 2025 season, and ending Marc Marquez's 105-day, 15-race win streak of terror. Well,
May 25th.
It was about damn time.
May 25th was the last time Marc Marquez didn't win a race until Sunday in Barcelona.
Pretty good.
That was the British Grand Prix. That was Marco Bezzecchi's victory on the day, and then Mark would win the next 15, if you include the sprints, until this Sunday. Well, we got to give Alex his flowers, Cam. That was, there wasn't really any much doubt after Friday and Saturday. This was the Alex Marquez weekend that we'd been waiting for, and he really was the dominant force this weekend more than anything else.
Pretty much from the minute the teams unloaded the bikes. This track is everything that Alex Marquez is excellent at and everything that Marc Marquez post-arm breakage isn't, which is to say there's not a lot of long left-handers for Mark to make up time in. It's all a lot of really long right-handers and the flowing types of turns that Alex excels at, whereas Mark is better at the stopping and starting stuff. And that's pretty much how it played out, that those two were the fastest, but Alex always had maybe three or four tenths in his back pocket when he needed it that he could dip into, and Mark was just really at 100% just to keep up with him.
Yeah, that's pretty much how this played out. And like you said, it's the key corners, in my opinion, 3, 12, and 13, the long right-handers. That's where Alex was making his time. Also, probably the three corners you want to be quick around if you don't want to be overtaken, because that's where you're setting up key overtaking zones. Turn 4 is a passing opportunity in Catalunya. And of course, turn 1, that's the best place to overtake. You're doing 210 miles an hour into that braking zone on these modern day bikes, and you know, the sprint, we saw plenty of passes into turn 1. So if you've got a tenth and a half on those last two corners over the one man who can probably beat you on raw pace alone, that's a hell of an ace in your back pocket to have over the course of the weekend. And it's a shame, because it really should have been a Grand Slam weekend for Alex, because he was untouchable in the sprint too. Took the early lead, didn't look back, got the whole shot, had 8 perfect laps, had a 1.2 second lead. Mark had already given up. You know, he admitted he'd given up trying to chase him, because he was like, I'm just going to take the second, I can't get him. And then on lap 9, he loses some concentration. He goes into turn 10. Has a wobble, tucks the front, comes in too hot, down he goes, and that's what gifted Mark that sprint win. And you just go, Alex, not again. It's a classic one, Cam. We've seen Mark talk about it before this season. Alex admitting he just lost concentration.
Yeah, it's something with these bikes where, because of the way that the modern MotoGP prototype makes lap time, so much of this bike goes out of sync the minute you kind of back off too much, that it actually throws you off. And he came into that turn way too hot. You could see it. He misses the turn in, and death taxes Ducati, tucks the front. Not the only person to crash out that way this weekend, but probably one of the more painful ones, because he had that sprint race sewn up. I mean, you mentioned it. Mark had basically thrown in the towel. Oh no, this steak isn't going to kill me via coronary from how juicy it is. I'll have to just take a second.
Yeah, it's turn 10's always been tricky, because it's not the old turn 10 that MotoGP has. It's now the Formula 1 turn 10, where it's a lot tighter. a bend, so it's a much heavier braking zone at the bridge than what it used to be. And Matt Oxley explained it beautifully on social media at the time, where he basically goes, well, look, the way modern MotoGP is, you can't afford to ease off. It's very hard to ease off on a MotoGP bike these days because you've got to keep loading the front tire because of how grippy the rear is nowadays, because of how grippy it is. And the fact it's got so much grip and pushing the rear of the bike into the ground and the chatter that it creates.
Yeah.
Like
it shoves you. Mm. It creates understeer. As soon as you create understeer on the bike, you're at risk of low siding.
Yeah. And of course, Alex, and in any situation, because we've seen this happen to Mark a couple of times this year as well, where if you're not consistently loading the front and the front's not ready for it, you lose front grip, and that's what causes these low sides and Ducati tuck in the front. And we joked about it many a time, but on these modern-day MotoGP bikes, it is actually harder to gauge your pace than it is to go all out. It really is weird how that goes sometimes, that these bikes are more on a knife edge than ever.
yeah, it's the Michelin rear slick being too good for how poor the Michelin front slick is.
Yeah, it's a very weird situation where the rear is too good and the front is not good enough, because the front's really bad at telling its riders when it's about to let go until it obviously does.
That was a problem even before the aero and ride height device revolution. And yeah, it's going to be a problem until we get rid of these tires. Thanks, guys.
Yeah. One more year of this shit until we get Pirelli. And, well, at least Pirelli's going down one of multiple bikes, I suppose. Yay.
Yeah. Another 10,000 top rack wins. and yeah, I mean, poor Marc Marquez. He's just going to have to try and celebrate his 9th world crown in front of the Japanese fans who love him, as opposed to the Italian fans who hate him.
We were so close to getting the thing that y'all thought was going to happen.
For those who didn't know the math, Mark would have had to have carried a 222-point lead to win the championship 6 rounds early at Misano this weekend. He was 2 points shy, I think it was. If he won the Grand Prix as well as the sprint, it would have been enough at that point where he would have had a genuine match point at Misano. It would have still been really difficult for him to win the world title there, but he would have at least had a mathematical chance of being able to do so. That now can't happen because Alex won the Grand Prix. Mark would have had to have taken 10 points out of Alex over the weekend. He only took 7 out. So yeah, as Cam points out, the Misano title win is not happening.
Unless Alex Marquez gets done for doping.
There's always a chance. In other words, don't go to any restaurant Andrea Iannone has visited in the last 6 years, okay?
Do not pull a dirty Ian and piss hot.
Do not piss hot. Do not eat any tainted meat, allegedly. You know, don't do any coke. Whatever you do.
Nothing is tainted about one chicken breast and 2 asparagus. Come on, guys.
It's a balanced breakfast.
Good Lord.
Poor Mark. He only got, like, friggin' 32 out of a possible 37 points this weekend. That brother's starving.
Ducati also wins the Constructors' Championship because, well, who else was going to win it?
They won the Constructors' Championship in the first week of September.
Bruh.
7 Grand Prix early.
Pretty good.
It's pretty good going, and if my maths is right, I'm pretty sure Marc Marquez was the representative for Ducati for something like 83% of all their points scored this year. I've got the breakdown in front of me here. 454 points as a constructor has come from Marc Marquez. Alex Marquez had 62 of them, and Pecco Bagnaia's win in Austin counts for the other 25. That's it.
I feel like that is a perfect and agonizing segue into our next topic. The wonderfully awful, weird tale of Pecco Bagnaia's weekend.
Mm. More of this again? We just talked about this.
RJ, well, he had his worst qualifying performance in 3 years.
Well,
he thought he had struck gold and figured it out. Battleton Park after he had a very good race after a terrible weekend otherwise. He came here with something equivalent to that setup, and he looked like a Moto2 bike out there.
He got blown the F up. Yeah, the thing is that, for a bit more backstory on this, Battleton Park was basically Ducati taking its most radical gamble. Yeah, I think they moved the entire assembly of the bike 3 centimeters or something like that to try and do something completely radical with the setup and see if that worked. It kind of did in Battleton. The only reason he had 2 errors was because he was pushing too hard. But Bagnaia felt it was good that he could try and push hard because he felt more confident about it. But then he gets to Catalunya with that setup on Friday. He goes into Q1 from the back of the field. He gets eliminated in Q1 in 21st place on the grid. His worst qualifying performance in 3 years. And then he was 14th in the sprint.
He was like a second off the next Ducati, dude.
Yeah.
It was bad.
It was horrendous. Now, apparently, after Saturday night, they brought back his Barcelona setup from the Solidarity Grand Prix last year, the one that he won to close out the 2024 season. And he was excellent. He was a lot better. He went from 21st to 7th, had genuinely good race pace, and it felt a lot better for Pecco. And I mean, look, personally, I'm at the point where I don't think you want to believe any false dawn coming out of this man anymore, because he's had about, according to Val Kurenevsky,
like
at the race,
a dozen of these. Yeah, I watched that episode with them.
Yeah, like Val said, this is like his sick false dawn. Now I've been keeping count since the season started.
and the problem is, like, at some point, like, before the race this weekend, this felt like the weekend where, like, everyone kind of just had enough. Because Pecco was out of his mind in the media. Ducati were out of their minds in the media back at him. Basically said, like, he needs to help us help him. I think was Davide's quote about it. And it's just, this track is worst case scenario for Marc Marquez post arm breakage. He finished second.
Yeah. Well, second here last year at the Solidarity Grand Prix on a 23 as well.
Yes. And therein lies the problem. If Marc Marquez has a bad day and actually keeps the bike upright, he's still going to bring it home on the podium. If Pecco Bagnaia at this point is having a bad day, throw a dart at a board and that's the finishing position.
We can't even say Marc is having a bad day by crashing. His last crash in a Grand Prix was Jerez back in May.
I know. Marc Marquez's bad days amount to winning, but unconvincingly, finishing second or crashing.
Yeah. This is the flaw.
Yeah.
Even Digi Antonio was third in the sprint.
It's not like it was a GP25 problem.
No.
Because the GP25, like, the is it different or is it not story of the GP25 will ring on for decades to come. But at the end of the day, it feels like this was the weekend where mentally the floor fell out for Pecco. And it can't keep going on like this.
I was going to say, like, how long a leash do you have? Because like you said, Tardozzi was like, he's got to help us, let us help him. And that's really the first sign I've seen anyone from Ducati really, you know, kind of kick back a little bit against Pecco. And look, I need to point this out here, right? And I'm going to be as balanced as I can when I say this.
Mm-hmm.
Pecco is the second most important rider in the history of Ducati. He is their most successful rider ever. He's won 2 world championships. He has 30 top flight wins with that team. He is an incredibly important rider. The Ducati are not what they are today if it's not for Pecco. Like, I cannot underestimate that contribution.
He brought them back to winning ways.
Yeah. He's been huge for the development of that manufacturer. And I don't normally want to give him credit when he's taking time out of his busy schedule of dismissing war crimes in Gaza, but Simon Patterson made a very solid point this week when he mentioned Gigi Delinea is quite ruthless in how he treats his riders at times. He doesn't coddle people. Yeah, that's the exact point I was going to make.
We're not on speaking terms.
Yeah. And Dovi was a 3-time MotoGP runner-up, 3 years running on that Ducati.
There was one thing stopping Ducati from starting this dominance early, and it was an incredibly huge grinned man from Spain who was willing to ruin his body to win, to beat Ducati on a bike that, even back in 2018, was questionable.
Yeah. So my point is that Delinea is one of those people that I think believes that the bike is more important than the person who rides it, to the point where he had no problem walking away from the negotiating table with one of its greatest riders in Andrea Dovizioso and saying, thank you, but no thank you, and off you go, when they were quite as dominant.
That was the whole point of getting the Ducati, getting the Decimo Sedici to this point. When they really, like, 2020, they took a big swing at the bike, didn't really work, worked on it through 21, worked on it through 22, got it working. Like, the idea is to give the riders the best bike they think is possible, rather than build the fastest thing possible that is nigh on impossible to ride, and hope that you luck into a superhuman talent like Casey Stoner or Marc Marquez, or Valentino Rossi, or Jorge Lorenzo. And what we've got right now is kind of a perfect storm, where the GP25 is still the fastest bike in this field.
Depends on who you ask.
Well, I don't care what Van Man has to say. But here's the thing. It doesn't have that throw a leg over it and win instant rideability of the 24. I think that's something that just about everybody would agree on. Then you've got the best bad bike rider conceivable, who will ride anything up to and including a bike that is trying to kill him, and will wring whatever result is available out of it. And you've got, as you've described in the past, the ultimate Goldilocks rider. Pecco needs everything just so, and when it is, he is extraordinarily fast. And that's about as much of a perfect storm as you could get to exist for Pecco to then mentally tailspin, because Mark can just throw a leg over the GP25 and beat the field bloody every weekend. Being a teammate of that man has to suck.
It's the perfect storm. It's the perfect storm of shititude. If you're someone like Pecco, who is a very fast but very sensitive rider in terms of setup and adjustments, you've got MotoGP's greatest blunderbuss on the other side of the garage on a bike that he's riding at an inconceivably high level. The man just won 15 Grand Prix in a row and didn't really break a sweat in two-thirds of them.
We're disappointed that he is not winning the title of Misano.
And you've got a guy who is winning the championship. Sorry, I should say second in the championship right now, is ahead of you by 68 points, and he's riding last year's bike, the bike you won. Well, I would say won, but you didn't. You got beaten to that championship by Jorge Martin last year, and you're being beaten again by another GP24, and it's Alex Marquez, who to this point in his MotoGP career was a good rider, but wasn't a great one until this season. And it's the perfect storm of ways to make a dude look bad. And I partly feel bad for the man. Like, we all know he's a quality rider. We're like, I don't got any personal beef with that man. He's a good dude and a good rider. And look, as a neutral MotoGP fan, I don't want to see one of the best riders in the world rolling around in 21st place. That's no good for anybody. Like,
no.
I want to see these dudes at their best. And
we build this as Mark walking into the world champion's house.
And he's already
blew it up. He blew it up. He kicked the door off the hinges.
Yeah, you kicked the door off the hinges, took the car keys, changed the locks already, and now he's with his missus while Banya is downstairs making breakfast. That's the level of beating we're talking about right now.
This has not been a fight. This has been a slaughter.
Yeah. Like, Mark is 250 points ahead of Pekka right now in the standings. It's more than 2-1. It is a unholy clobbering right now.
And forget being second Ducati. There was times this weekend where he was like sixth Ducati.
Shit's wild.
Belt to bottom. Belt to bottom. Dre, tell us the good news about how Formula One is getting its tendrils into MotoGP this time.
Well, we got a exceptional press conference on Friday that confirmed that was already a pretty badly kept secret in MotoGP that Günther Steiner, the founder of Haas Formula One team back from 2016, has now led a consortium fronted by Apex to buy Tech 3. That is now confirmed. It was allegedly a $20 million deal, about 15 million euros, to buy the team. He had a press conference on Friday. He said an F-bomb 2 minutes and 47 seconds in, because that's our Günther. How great is he for the sport?
We are
so easily pleased.
Yeah!
He said the thing. He said the funny thing with the funny bad language. Ooh. Yeah, like, it's...
Wait, is somebody going to slam the door right behind him?
Somebody stop this man. But yes, it's... Günther Steiner is a MotoGP team.
Fuck smash your mic.
And it was a great result for him in the Grand Prix. Enea Bastianini was third, so Tech 3 got their first podium of the year at the hands of the beast, beating Pedro Acosta to do so. And yeah, not a bad lucky charm for your first weekend as a team boss.
I like how Enea Bastianini went from being awful to being brilliant on the KTM seemingly overnight.
Yeah, and now he's lost his crew chief.
Yeah. Another KTM firing will fix it.
Yeah.
Can we just talk about the three-way war that the KTMs had in the sprint race as well?
That was great. Fantastic fight. Him, Binder, and Acosta just tearing lumps out of each other. Fucking great stuff. No, I was going to say, I don't know how I feel about this. This is a strange one, because... Because there was a rumor mill last year that Lewis Hamilton was looking at Gresini last year. And the talk on that kind of died down a little bit, because I don't think Nadia Padovani wants to sell the team. That's the impression that I get. But when I found out the rumored number was 10 million, I was like, oh, hang on.
That's it?
Like, that's it? Like, the level of buy-in, because it was reported by my old colleague Yuri Pudjemont on autosport.com yesterday morning that apparently Max Verstappen and Lewis Hamilton are still potentially eyeing up the other independents. My first thought was the level of buy-in is so cheap, because, I mean, Lewis Hamilton's making like 40 million a year before endorsements. Like, Pecco Bagnaia is making 10 million a year right now in MotoGP, roughly.
Trey, so, what's the top gear line?
Which one? There's many.
We just discussed 10,000, this in the IndyCar episode.
£10,000 for an engine rebuild. Sold the whole thing for $7,000. Shows so, how much the rest, of,
the rest
it's
of it's worth. Yeah, because the thing
why
is...
Why won't you rev?
Yeah, it's like... The level of buying is so cheap. It's basically a free investment. And if you believe, and if you want to have the backing that Formula One and Liberty Media will do for MotoGP what it's done for Formula One and objectively raised its value in the 9 years they've owned the sport, it's such a cheap buy-in. You're almost guaranteed to make money on this deal. Like, $15 million for a MotoGP team is peanuts. Now, look, people want to ask, why is it so cheap? That's a very simple question. There's a very simple answer to that question. MotoGP teams don't make money. It's really that simple.
Yes, this sport is hurling money down a black hole.
The value of MotoGP teams are not the teams themselves. It is the grid slots that Dorna leases them. That's the value of being on the grid. It's not like IndyCar, where the charters are now what's carrying the majority of their value because of their right to be on the grid. Like, look at Ed Carpenter in IndyCar. The moment he got a charter, he sold half of it to Ted Geloff, and that was apparently worth 40 million euros. Well, dollars, I should say. More like 35 million euros, really. But you get the gist. That's a huge amount of money. Just by your right to be on the grid. MotoGP teams don't have that. In fact, Dorna is still subsidizing the independents as we speak. Though they're still paying them like 2-3 million just to financially support them every year because they don't make money. It's why the manufacturers are sitting down with Dorna right now, because they want their own Concord agreements. Because they're not making money on this. They want a bigger slice of the pie because they now know their worth. That's why it's so cheap.
Yep.
And
yeah, I mean, I don't really have a whole lot to add, honestly.
Do people, like, the thing is, right, there was a lot of kissing up on the broadcasts when Günther rolled up in town. And I get why, because Günther's a marketable, likable personality. We all know he loves a swear, he loves a meme, and, you know, you're on mute, RJ, by the way.
He's also been in the business a while, Granny. I keep doing this all the time because, like, this is one of those where I hadn't watched it. But yeah, he's been in the business for a while.
He knows. This is the thing, right? When I met him a couple of years ago when I was at WTF 1, it's more than obvious. The man, I wouldn't say relishes it, because I think he still's never really been quite used to the fact that people now recognize him in airports and take selfies and have merchandise for it and all that. But he's certainly reveling in the surprising popularity spike he got off of Drive to Survive. Even though he's never watched the show, funnily enough. But he'll embrace the fandom that comes of it. He knows. These things, I'm not sure he's actually got that level of pull or that level of brand value that just him being there is going to make Tech 3 a more valuable entity. But I'm curious to see the direction the ownership goes, because if the level of buy-in for Tech 3 is going to be just 15 mil, I think a couple of people will be making some phone calls very soon saying, is this team for sale? And it's going to be interesting because you've got a bunch of independents that have been around for a while. I mean, Nadia Padovani at Gresini, that was Fausto Gresini's team, and he built that shit from the ground up. Hervé Poncharal, for those who don't know, the former owner of Tech 3, he'd owned that team since 1990. He's been in the paddock for over 40 years. He's owned that team for 35 of them. It's a little bit of the soul of the sport going away a little bit, because Hervé is one of the boys, and he's been there for a long, long time, and he was head of the IRTA, the team's association, for a reason. He was a universally well-liked and trusted individual that had a lot of good people's interests in heart, and I think Hervé's told TNT Sports that, I'm not selling unless you can guarantee that you're not going to get rid of any staff for at least 2 years. You're going to keep the team on the grid. You're going to keep the Vedapin, and you're going to look after the people that are here. And apparently Günther was like, absolutely, we're not moving anybody out. I hope that holds up, because the fact that Hervé had to put that guarantee in place to protect the people that are there at Tech 3 hopefully leads them into a brighter future. But it will be interesting to see what happens when MotoGP have a bunch of consortiums owning their teams as opposed to X-Racers.
Factories and independents.
In factories and independents. The dynamic of ownership in the league has shifted, and that's going to be interesting, definitely. Whew. Let's get the silly season out of the way before we get out of here, because there's a couple of confirmed deals to get out of the way. Johan Zarco is going to stay at LCR for 2 more years. That was confirmed. We knew about Luca Marini a little while ago, but that was confirmed as a 1-year extension over at the Honda factory team. And the Race put out an article today that basically said Honda is looking at Luca Marini like he's their leading man going forward. Which,
Mir, you got to stop crashing, buddy.
Remember, 5 years ago, Johan Mir, the definition of rock solid consistency.
Not anymore. It looks like he could be the man at risk. Now, I'm not sure how much I truly believe that story, because if you were so sure about that, why did you only give him a 1-year contract? But we'll see how that plays out. Frankie Morbidelli also confirmed earlier this week to be on another 1-year extension with the VR46 team as well. Not sure about him going forward either, because boy, that boy's got a bozo gene in him.
Yeah, you know, the more I love me some Frankie Morbidelli off the track, but on the track, the speed has been better this year, but the bozo in every other respect has been nigh on unwatchable.
He is, shall we say, clumsy.
Clumsy, like Carl Weezer levels of clumsy at this point.
Mm-hmm.
If you know, you know. Fabio Quartararo is fucking excellent at riding a motorcycle, and he got to ride a new one this week. You got to try the V4 on Monday.
Shame, apparently, a good chunk of that test was rained out, which didn't help.
How very Audi R15 of that. Oh, we brought a brand new vehicle. It's raining.
Ah, shit. But they were all there for a test. I think the Honda was down there as well because of, you know, TT concessions and all that. So Honda's allowed to test
as much as you want.
Basically test 6 times a year or test whenever you like, basically, with your Grand Prix drivers. So they were down there as well. Apparently Fabio will ride it again after Misano on Monday. They'll be racing that V4 for the first time this weekend with Augusto Fernandez wildcarding with that brand new V4 engine.
Going to be very interesting to watch, because sometimes did come out of the test. Again, with the rain, we don't know a whole lot in terms of definitively where it was. But it doesn't look like it was that far off.
Indeed. You know, it's
this is the rock upon which they build their church for the 850 regulations in 2 years.
Jack Miller's already also come out and said, stick it in my bike right now. We don't care about results for the rest of the year. Let's just get as much mileage as we can. Yeah, just get as much mileage as we can between now and the end of the year. Just run it immediately and see what happens, basically. So I'll have to wait and see on that. It's a shame, because I hope it's something, because Fabio was so good this weekend. Honestly.
Yes, and his time at the front lasted precisely one straightaway in the sprint before he was drag raced by Pedro Acosta and Marc Marquez.
Poor guy. Like, second in the sprint, his best result of the year, fifth in the Grand Prix, on that Yamaha. I don't know how he's doing that. Like, Fabio Quartararo is insane. He's an insane human. Like, to do that on that Yamaha in line 4 is bonkers. My infinite respect goes out to that man, because he is, right now, literally, given his nickname is El Diablo, he's literally Satan's strongest soldier right now, because that boy is struggling, but he's making it work somehow. MotoGP's back this weekend. Misano, last round before we go to what we call flyaway season. We get that, then a couple of weeks off, and then we head to Japan for the Japanese Grand Prix at Motegi. But yeah, we've got to get through Misano. No match point for Marc Marquez just yet, but he'll be looking to get back to winning ways.
Dude!
We'll have to
He's
wait
have
and
to
see.
Wait for his crown just a little bit longer.
3 weeks. Oh, what a shame. Poor guy. We'll be back for that next week. So next week, a MotoGP review at Misano and our IndyCar season review in podcast form. But until then, I've been Dre Harrison, Dave and Cameron Buckley, and RJ O'Connell. And until next time, thanks for listening. Sayonara.
Later, y'all.
only Yamaha could develop a V10 for MotoGP. That would sound amazing.
Brother, how would that even work?